Chapter 18. It was impossible that Lieutenant Skaiat would recognize me. She bowed, oblivious to the fact that I knew her. It was strange to see her in dark blue, and so much more sober, more grave than when I'd known her in Oz. An inspector supervisor in a station as busy as this likely never set foot on the ships her subordinates inspected, but Inspector Supervisor Skaiat wore almost as little jewellery as her assistant. A long strand of green and blue jewels coiled from shoulder to opposite hip, and a red stone dangled from one ear, but otherwise a similar, though clearly more expensive, scattering of friends, lovers, dead relatives decorated her uniform jacket. One plain gold token hung on the cuff of her right sleeve, just next to the edge of the glove, the placement that of something she intended to be reminded of, as much for herself to see as anyone else. It looked cheap, machine-made, not the sort of thing she would wear. She bowed.
"Citizen Syverdon, honored Breck, please sit. Will you have tea?"
Still effortlessly elegant, even after 20 years. "Your assistant already offered us tea, thank you, Inspector Supervisor," I said. Inspector Supervisor Skaiat looked momentarily at me, and then at Syverdon. Slightly surprised, I thought. She had been addressing Syverdon primarily, thinking of Syverdon as the principal person between the two of us. I sat. Syverdon hesitated a moment, and then sat in the seat beside me, arms still crossed to hide her bare hands.
"I wanted to meet you myself, citizen," Inspector Supervisor Skaiat said, when she'd taken her own seat. "Privilege of office. It isn't every day you meet someone 1,000 years old."
Syverdon smiled, small and tight.
"Indeed not," she agreed.
"And I felt it would be improper for security to arrest you on the dock. Though,"
Inspector Supervisor Skaiat gestured placatory, the pin on her cuff flashing once as she did,
"you are in some legal difficulty, citizen."
Syverdon relaxed, just slightly, shoulders lowering, jaw loosening, barely detectable unless you knew her. Skyat's accent and mildly deferential tone were having an effect.
"I am," Syverdon acknowledged. "I intend to appeal."
"There's some question about the matter, then?"
Stilted, formal, a query that wasn't a query. But no answer came.
"I can take you to the palace offices myself, and avoid any entanglement with security."
Of course she could. She'd worked this out with security's chief already.
"I'd be grateful."
Syverdon sounded more like her old self than I'd heard her in the last year.
"Would it be worth asking you to assist me contacting Gare's lord?"
Gare might conceivably have some responsibility for this last member of the house it had taken over. Hated Gare, which had absorbed its enemy, Vendereye, Syverdon's house. Vendereye's relations with Orware hadn't been any better than with Gare, but I supposed the request was a measure of just how desperate and alone Syverdon was.
"Ah,"
Inspector Supervisor Skaiat winced, just slightly.
"Orware and Gare aren't as close as they used to be, citizen. About 200 years ago, there was an exchange of heirs. The Gare cousin killed herself."
The verb Inspector Supervisor Skaiat used implied that it hadn't been an approved, medical-mediated suicide, but something illicit and messy.
"And the Orware cousin went mad and ran off to join some cult somewhere."
Syverdon made a breathy, amused noise.
"Typical."
Inspector Supervisor Skaiat raised an eyebrow, but only said, temperately,
"It left some bad feeling on both sides, so my connections with Gare aren't what they could be, and I might or might not be able to be helpful to you, and their responsibilities toward you might be difficult to determine. Though you might find that useful in an appeal."
Syverdon gestured abortively, arms still tightly crossed, one elbow lifting slightly.
and doesn't sound like it's worth the trouble.
Inspector Supervisor Skyat gestured ambivalence.
You'll be fed and sheltered here in any event, citizen.
She turned to me.
And you, honoured. You're here as a tourist?
Yes, I smiled,
looking, I hoped, very much like a tourist from the Gerontate.
You're a very long way from home.
Inspector Supervisor Skyat smiled, politely, as though the observation were an idle one. I've been travelling a long time.
Of course she, and by implication others, were curious about me. I had arrived in company with Cyverdon. Most of the people here wouldn't know her name, but those who did would be attracted by the staggering unlikelihood of her having been found after 1,000 years, and the connection to an event as notorious as Garset.
Still smiling pleasantly, Inspector Supervisor Skyat asked,
"Looking for something? Avoiding something? Just like to travel?"
I made a gesture of ambiguity. "I suppose I like to travel."
Inspector Supervisor Skyat's eyes narrowed slightly at my tone of voice, muscles tensing just perceptibly around her mouth.
She thought, it seemed, that I was hiding something.
And she was interested now, and more curious than before.
For an instant, I wondered why I'd answered the way I had, and realized that Inspector Supervisor Skyat's being here was incredibly dangerous to me. Not because she might recognize me, but because I recognized her. Because she was alive, and Lieutenant Orne was not. Because everyone of her standing had failed Lieutenant Orne. I had failed Lieutenant Orne. And no doubt, if then Lieutenant Skyat had been put to the test, she would have failed as well. Lieutenant Orne herself had known this. I was in danger of my emotions affecting my behaviour. They already had. They always did. But I had never been confronted with Skyat Orware. Until now.
"My response is ambiguous, I know," I said, making that placatory gesture Inspector Supervisor Skyat had already used. "I never questioned my desire to travel. When I was a baby, my grandmother said she could tell from the way I took my first steps that I was born to go places. She kept on saying it. I suppose I've just always believed it."
Inspector Supervisor Skyat gestured acknowledgement.
"It would be a shame to disappoint your grandmother in any event. Your Ratcher Eye is very good."
"My grandmother always said I'd better study languages."
Inspector Supervisor Skyat laughed, almost as I remembered her from Oz, but still that trace of gravity.
"Forgive me, honoured, but you have gloves."
"I meant to buy some before we boarded, but I decided to wait and buy the right sort. I hoped I'd be forgiven my bare hands on arrival, since I'm an uncivilized foreigner."
"An argument could be made for either approach,"
Inspector Supervisor Skyat said, still smiling, a shade more relaxed than moments before.
"Though,"
a serious turn,
"you speak very well, but I don't know how much you understand other things."
I raised an eyebrow.
"Which things?"
"I don't wish to be indelicate, honoured, but Citizen Cyverdon doesn't appear to have any money in her possession."
Beside me, Cyverdon grew tense again, tightened her jaw, swallowed something she had been about to say.
"Parents," continued Inspector Supervisor Skyat, "buy clothes for their children. The temple gives gloves to attendants, flower bearers and water bearers and such. That's all right, because everyone owes loyalty to God, and I know from your entrance application that you've employed Citizen Cyverdon as your servant, but..."
"Ah," I understood her. "If I buy gloves for Citizen Cyverdon, which she clearly needs, it will look as though I've offered her clientage."
"Just so," agreed Inspector Supervisor Skyat. "Which would be fine if that's what you intended, but I don't think things work that way in the Gerontate, and honestly..."
She hesitated, clearly on delicate ground again.
"And honestly," I finished for her, "she's got a difficult legal situation that might not be helped by her association with a foreigner." My normal habit was expressionlessness. I could keep my anger out of my voice easily. I could speak to Inspector Supervisor Skyat as though she were not in any way connected with Lieutenant Orne, as though Lieutenant Orne had had no anxieties or hopes or fears about future patronage from her. Even a rich one.
I'm not sure I'd say it quite that way, began Inspector Supervisor Skyat.
I'll just give her some money now, I said. That should take care of it.
No.
Cyberdin's tone was sharp, angry.
I don't need money. Every citizen is due basic necessities, and clothes are a basic necessity. I'll have what I need.
At Inspector Supervisor Skyat's surprised, inquiring look, Cyberdin said further,
Breck has good reasons for not having given me money.
Inspector Supervisor Skyat had to know what that likely meant.
Citizen, I don't mean to lecture, she said, but if that's the case, why not just let security send you to medical? I understand you're reluctant to do that.
Re-education wasn't the sort of thing that was easy to mention politely,
but really, it might make things better for you. It often does.
A year ago, I'd have expected Cyberdin to lose her temper at this suggestion, but something had changed for her in that time. She only said, slightly irritably,
No.
Inspector Supervisor Skyat looked at me. I raised one eyebrow and a shoulder, as if to say, That's how she is.
Breck has been very patient with me,
said Cyberdin, astonishing me utterly,
and very generous.
She looked at me.
I don't need money.
Whatever you like, I said. Inspector Supervisor Skyat had watched the whole exchange intently, frowning just slightly. Curious, I thought, not only about who and what I was, but what I was to Cyberdin.
Well, she said now, let me take you to the palace. Honored Breck Gaillard, I'll have your things delivered to your lodgings.
She rose. I stood as well, and Cyberdin beside me. We followed Inspector Supervisor Skyat to the outer office. Empty. Dow Sate, Inspector Adjunct Sate, I would have to remember, likely gone for the day, given the hour. Instead of taking us through the front of the offices, Inspector Supervisor Skyat led us through a back corridor, through a door that opened at no perceptible cue from her. Station, that would be. The AI that ran this place was this place, paying close attention to the Inspector Supervisor of its docks.
Are you all right, Breck?
Asked Cyberdin, looking at me with puzzlement and concern. Fine, I lied. Just a little tired. It's been a long day. I was sure my expression hadn't changed, but Cyberdin had noticed something. Through the door was more corridor and a bank of lifts, one of which opened for us, then closed, and moved with no signal. Station knew where Inspector Supervisor Skyat wanted to go, which turned out to be the main concourse. The lift door slid open onto a broad and dazzling view, an avenue paved in black stone veined with white, 700 meters long and 25 wide, the roof 60 meters above. Directly ahead stood the temple. The steps were not really steps, but an area marked out on the paving with red and green and blue stones. Actions on the steps of the temple potentially had legal significance. The entrance was itself 40 meters high and 8 wide, framed with representations of hundreds of gods, many human-shaped, some not, a riot of colours. Just inside the entrance lay a basin for worshippers to wash their hands in, and beyond that, containers of cut flowers, a swathe of yellow and orange and red, and baskets of incense for purchase as offerings. Away down either side of the concourse, shops, offices, balconies with flowered vines snaking down, benches and plants, and even at an hour when most Ratcha'i would be at supper, hundreds of citizens walked or stood talking, uniformed, white for the translator's office, light brown for station security, dark brown for military, green for horticulture, light blue for administration, or not, all glittering with jewellery, all thoroughly civilised. I saw an ancillary follow its captain into a crowded tea shop, and wondered which ship it was. What ships were here? But I couldn't ask. It wasn't the sort of thing Breck from the Garantate would care about.
I saw them all suddenly, for just a moment, through non-Ratchai eyes, an eddying crowd of unnervingly ambiguously gendered people. I saw all the features that would mark gender for non-Ratchai, never, to my annoyance and inconvenience, the same way in each place. Short hair or long, worn unbound, trailing down a back, or in a thick curled nimbus, or bound, braided, pinned, tied. Thick-bodied or thin, faces delicate-featured or coarse, with cosmetics or none, a profusion of colours that would have been gender-marked in other places. All of this matched randomly with bodies curving at breast and hip or not, bodies that one moment moved in ways various non-Ratchai would call feminine, the next moment masculine. 20 years of habit overtook me, and for an instant I despaired of choosing the right pronouns, the right terms of address. But I didn't need to do that here. I could drop that worry, a small but annoying weight I had carried all this time. I was home. This was home that had never been home for me. I had spent my life at annexations and stations in the process of becoming this sort of place, leaving before they did, to begin the whole process again somewhere else. This was the sort of place my officers came from, and departed too. The sort of place I had never been, and yet it was completely familiar to me. Places like this were, from one point of view, the whole reason for my existence.
"It's a bit longer walk this way," Inspector Supervisor Skyat said. "But a dramatic entrance."
"It is," I agreed.
"Why all the jackets?" asked Cyverdon. "That bothered me last time. Though the last place, anyone in a coat was wearing it knee-length. Here it looks like it's either jackets or coats down to the floor, and the collars are just wrong."
"Fashion didn't trouble you the other places we've been," I said.
"The other places were foreign," Cyverdon answered irritably. "They weren't supposed to be home."
Inspector Supervisor Skyat smiled.
"I imagine you'll get used to it eventually. The palace proper is this way."
We followed her across the concourse, my and Cyverdon's uncivilized clothes and bare hands attracting some curious and disgusted looks, and came to the entrance, marked simply with a bar of black over the doorway.
"I'll be fine," said Cyverdon, as though I'd spoken. "I'll catch up with you when I'm done."
"I'll wait." Inspector Supervisor Skyat watched Cyverdon go into the palace proper, and then said,
"Honored Breck, a word, please."
I acknowledged her with a gesture, and she said,
"You're very concerned about Citizen Cyverdon. I understand that, and it speaks well of you, but there's no reason to worry for her safety. The Ratch takes care of its citizens."
"Tell me, Inspector Supervisor, if Cyverdon were some nobody from a nothing house who had left the Ratch without permits, and whatever else it was she did, to be honest, I don't know if there was anything else, if she were someone you had never heard of with a house name you didn't recognize and know the history of, would she have been met courteously at the dock and given tea and then escorted to the palace proper to make her appeal?" Her right hand lifted, the barest millimeter, and that small incongruous gold tag flashed.
"She's not in that position any more. She's effectively houseless and broke."
I said nothing, only looked at her.
"No, there's something in what you say. If I didn't know who she was, I wouldn't have thought to do anything for her, but surely even in the Garantate things work that way."
I made myself smile slightly, hoping for a more pleasant impression than I had likely been making. "They do." Inspector Supervisor Skyat was silent a moment, watching me, thinking about something, but I couldn't guess what, until she said,
"Do you intend to offer her clientage?"
That would have been an unspeakably rude question if I had been Ratchai, but when I had known her, Skyat Orware had often said things most others left unsaid. "How could I? I'm not Ratchai, and we don't make that sort of contract in the Garantate."
"No, you don't,"
Inspector Supervisor Skyat said, blunt.
"I can't imagine what it would be like to suddenly wake up 1,000 years from now, having lost my ship in a notorious incident. All my friends dead, my house gone. I might run away too." Cyverdon needs to find a way she can belong somewhere. Do, Ratchaeye Eyes, you look like you're offering that to her.
You're concerned I'm giving Cyverdon false expectations? I thought of Dao's Sate in the outer office. That beautiful, very expensive pearl and platinum pin that wasn't a token of clientage.
I don't know what expectations Citizen Cyverdon has. It just... You're acting as though you're responsible for her. It looks wrong to me.
If I were Ratchaeye, would it still look wrong to you?
If you were Ratchaeye, you would behave differently.
The tightness of her jaw argued she was angry, but trying to conceal it.
Whose name is on that pin?
The question, unintended, came out more brusquely than was politic.
What?
She frowned, puzzled.
That pin on your right sleeve, it's different from everything else you're wearing.
Whose name is on it? I wanted to ask again, and what have you done for Lieutenant Orne's sister?
Inspector Supervisor Skyat blinked and shifted slightly backward, almost as though I had struck her.
It's a memorial
for a friend
who died.
And you're thinking about her now. You keep shifting your wrist, turning it toward yourself. You've been doing it for the past few minutes.
I think of her frequently.
She took a breath, let it out, took another.
I think maybe I'm not being fair to you, Breck Gahiat.
I knew what name was on that pin, even though I hadn't seen it, knew it. Wasn't sure if, knowing, I felt better about Inspector Supervisor Skyat, or much, much worse. That I was in danger at this moment in a way I had never anticipated, never predicted, never dreamed might happen. I had already said things I should never, ever have said, was about to say more. Here was the one single person I had met in 20 long years who would know who I was. The temptation to cry out, "Lieutenant, look, it's me! I'm Justice of Torren One Esk!" was overwhelming. Instead, very carefully, I said, "I agree with you that Cyverdon needs to find herself a home here. I just don't trust the Ratch the way you do, the way she does."
Inspector Supervisor Skyat opened her mouth to answer me, but Cyverdon's voice cut across whatever Inspector Supervisor Skyat would have said.
"That didn't take long."
Cyverdon came up beside me, looked at me and frowned.
"Your leg is bothering you again. You need to sit down."
"Leg?" asked Inspector Supervisor Skyat. "An old injury that didn't heal quite right," I said. Glad of it for the moment, that Cyverdon would attribute any distress she saw to that. That Station would, if it was watching.
"And you've had a long day, and I've kept you standing here. I've been quite rude. Please forgive me, Honored,"
Inspector Supervisor Skyat said.
"Of course."
I bit back words that wanted to come out of my mouth behind that, and turned to Cyverdon. "So where do things stand now?"
"I've requested my appeal, and should have a date sometime in the next few days,"
she said.
"I put your name in, too."
At Inspector Supervisor Skyat's raised eyebrow, Cyverdon added,
"Breck saved my life. More than once."
Inspector Supervisor Skyat only said,
"Your audience probably won't be for a few months."
"Meantime," continued Cyverdon, with a small, still cross-armed acknowledging gesture,
"I've been assigned lodgings, and I'm on the ration list, and I've got 15 minutes to report to the nearest supplies office and get some clothes."
Lodgings? Well, if her staying with me had looked wrong to Inspector Supervisor Skyat, doubtless it would, for the same reasons, look wrong to Cyverdon herself. And even if she was no longer my servant, she had requested I accompany her to her audience. That was, I reminded myself, the important issue.
"Do you want me to come with you?"
I didn't want to. I wanted to be alone, to recover my equilibrium.
"I'll be fine. You need to get off that leg. I'll catch up with you tomorrow. Inspector Supervisor, it was good to meet you."
Cyverdon bowed, perfectly calculated courtesy toward a social equal, received an identical bow from Inspector Supervisor Skyat, and then was off down the concourse. I turned to Inspector Supervisor Skyat. Where do you recommend I stay? Half an hour later, I was, as I had wished to be, alone in my room. It was an expensive one. Just off the main concourse, an incredibly luxurious 5 meters square, a floor of what might almost have been real wood, dark blue walls, a table and chairs, and an image projector in the floor. Many, though not all, Radcha I, had optical and auditory implants that allowed them to view entertainments or listen to music or messages directly. But people still liked to watch things together, and the very wealthy sometimes made a point of turning their implants off. The blanket on the bed felt as if it might be actual wool, not anything synthetic. On one wall, a fold-down cot for a servant, which of course I no longer had, and, incredible luxury for the Ratch, the room had its own tiny bath, a necessity for me, given the gun and ammunition strapped to my body under my shirt. Station scans hadn't picked it up, and wouldn't, but human eyes could see it. If I left it in the room, a searcher might find it. I certainly wouldn't leave it in the dressing room of a public bath. A console on the wall near the door would give me access to communications, and Station. And it would allow Station to observe me, though I was certain it wasn't the only way Station could see into the room. I was back in the Ratch, never alone, never private. My luggage had arrived within 5 minutes of my taking the room, and with it, a tray of supper from a nearby shop, fish and greens, still steaming and smelling of spices. There was always the chance that no one was paying attention, but my luggage, when I opened it, had clearly been searched. Maybe because I was foreign, maybe not. I took out my tea flask and cups, and the icon of She Who Sprang from the Lily, set them on the low table beside the bed, used a liter of my water allowance to fill the flask, and then sat down to eat. The fish was as delicious as it smelled, and improved my mood slightly. I was at least better able to confront my situation once I'd eaten it, and had a cup of tea. Station could certainly see a large percentage of its residents with the same intimate view I'd had of my officers. The rest, including me now, it saw in less detail. Temperature, heart rate, respiration. Less impressive than the flood of data from more closely monitored residents, but still a great deal of information. Add to that a close knowledge of the person observed, her history, her social context, and likely Station could very nearly read minds. Nearly. It couldn't actually read thoughts. And Station didn't know my history, had no prior experience with me. It would be able to see the traces of my emotions, but wouldn't have many grounds for guessing accurately why I felt as I did. My hip had, in fact, been hurting, and Inspector Supervisor Skyat's words to me had been, in Radcha I terms, incredibly rude. If I had reacted with anger, visible to Station if it was looking, visible to Anna Andamiatna I if she had been looking, that was entirely natural. Neither one could do more than guess what had angered me. I could play the part now of the exhausted traveller, pained by an old injury, in need of nothing more than food and rest. The room was so quiet. Even when Cyverdon had been in one of her sulking moods, it hadn't seemed this oppressively silent. I hadn't grown as used to solitude as I had thought. I'm thinking of Cyverdon. I saw suddenly what I had not seen, there on the concourse, and blind angry with Skyat Orware. I had thought then that Inspector Supervisor Skyat had been the only person I had met who might know me. But that wasn't true. Cyverdon would have. But Lieutenant Orne had never expected anything from Cyverdon, had never stood to be hurt or disappointed by her. If they had ever met, Cyverdon would surely have made her disdain clear. Lieutenant Orne would have been stiffly polite, with an underlying anger that I would have been able to see, but she would never have had that sinking dismay and hurt she felt when then Lieutenant Skyat said, unthinkingly, something dismissive. But perhaps I was wrong to think my reactions to the two, Skyat Orware and Cyverdon Vendereye, were very different. I had already put myself in danger once, out of anger with Cyverdon. I couldn't untangle it. And I had a part to play, for whoever might be watching, an image I had carefully built on the way here. I set my empty cup beside the tea flask, and knelt on the floor before the icon, hip protesting slightly, and began to pray.